There are definitely like a few advantages that we can think of. So I guess the first one would be kind of fast decision making because you are in this design team of one. There aren't a lot of people in your direct team that you'd have to consult with. So you can make those decisions really quickly. Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back, everyone. So this week, we are talking about design teams of one. What do they do? And how do you cope if you find yourself alone in this vast, vast design world? So just before we kick off into the perils of the design team of one and the advantages, I just want to know, what have you ladies been up to this week?
Right. I have had a bit of a sick pupper, unfortunately. So for everyone at home, I have an 11 weeks old puppy.
Geriatric.
And yeah, she just had her 10-week vaccine last week. But she had an adverse reaction. So this week she developed an abscess and that abscess burst. And now she is being treated with loads of treats and cuddles at home. And she's being an absolute like champ. I have no idea how she's so resilient. I cried. My partner cried. She has just got on with it. She's just running around being cute with her little shaved patch on her back. So yeah, she's amazing. That's what I've done like on a personal level. And then I am not working currently. So my like learning goal this week was to become a Notion queen. I'm not sure if I yet achieve that because I think Notion is a lot more complex than I expected. But I learned for how sure to deal with databases. So that's what I'm proud about. But yeah, what about you guys? How's your week?
That sounds awesome. Like, also, I'm sorry to hear about your papa. And, you know, I hope she's doing better. But it's so nice that she's soldiering on and being a complete champ. So props to Eno. Yeah, no, like that all sounds great. Actually, you know, I've heard so much about what Notion can do, but I've never really like looked into it. I mean, we are kind of using Notion to manage everything. And actually, I am sort of using Notion as well to just manage like general life admin, but also, you know, portfolio stuff, because it is pretty complicated and just trying to make sure I have all of the content in one place. But yeah, like would be really great to hear about databases. That sounds awesome. On a sort of like personal note, I guess, I've been doing a bit more motion design. So just trying to make cute little animations when I have the time and try kind of play out or like test out other effects in After Effects. So yeah, that's me. What about you, Lauren? What have you been up to?
So this week, I am absolutely living the dream. And unlike the title of this episode, I am working on a project in a design team, well, a user research team of two. And I'm at that point, I guess, in my career where I've worked with certain people and really kind of found that group of people that I love and people that I love to work with. And I'm now working with one of those individuals that I really cherish again. So I'm just so excited for that. And also just to do a user research piece that is solely user research. It's just nice because normally I am in like a design team of one and I have to do kind of the full sweep, the full spectrum of things. So it's really nice to have a project that just really values that research element. And then in terms of kind of in my personal life, we've got a flatmate who's moving out and she's currently out of the country. So she told me that I could stage her room for photos. And I was so excited. The second she told me that, I went full queer eye. I did a one woman little intro dance. I redid her bookshelf. I organized her books by color, just like our very own Lavinia, who has like the most beautiful background with all these books, like in a rainbow spectrum. I cleaned everything. like there's such balance. I brought in a million house plants. And then on top of that, I was almost at the point where I want to do like confessionals at the end. Like for this week's project, we really want to incorporate this flatmate style and add quirky touches. Even though she's a Republican, we love her. Just kidding. She is by no means a Republican, but I just love that about Queer Eye, how it's just the gang just being like, despite the fact that they're Republicans, we still love them.
So oh, that they are political lines.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that underlying message of love. But
love it.
I got to do that, and I am just so pleased with how that's turned out, to the point where I will just open the door, go stand inside and be like, wow, it really makes a difference.
That's amazing. Like, you know, you should do one of those like before after posts on your Instagram, or we should put it on the pod Instagram as well.
Yeah. Oh, that would be amazing. So I just had like too much fun doing it, honestly. I like called everyone, even like former flatmates, and was just like, look, like this room is stunning.
So 2 years from now, we're probably going to have a episode being like Lauren's transition from UX to interior design.
Yeah. And slightly psychotic, because I'll just try to play every single character in Queer Eye as well. Many, many costume changes, wig changes for Jonathan. Oh, it's excellent.
Yeah. Great.
So on that, I think it's a perfect opportunity to jump into our main topic this week, which is design teams of one. Now, if you've worked in the UX space, you may have encountered these where you are the sole person on a project and you're really just kind of thrown in. And Lavinia, you had a little snippet here.
Oh, yeah. So whenever someone asks me about UX, I actually recommend the User Experience Team of One by Leah Bully for people to read, because I genuinely think it's like such a good intro to everything UX. It talks about the end-to-end process and like if you are a UX team of one, how to deal with it. So we like to start these episodes with a little bit of a definition, so we all know kind of like what we're talking about. So in her excerpt, she says, a UX team of one is someone who works in a situation where they are the key person driving a user-centered design philosophy. So that basically puts you at the center of the organization, and people look up at you and they're kind of asking you everything related to UX, from research to prototyping to every single kind of stage of the design thinking process, which obviously has its pros and its cons.
For sure. Amazing, amazing segue, Lavinia. So in terms of the pros of being a design team of one, there are definitely like a few advantages that we can think of. So I guess the first one would be kind of fast decision making, because you are in this design team of one. There aren't a lot of people in your direct team that you'd have to consult with, so you can make those decisions really quickly.
I think you also have like a massive impact as well because of that. I think we're probably going to touch on this later, but often if you are a UX team of one, you are likely to also be one of the first UXers in that organization, mm-hmm. or that team or that project, which means you get to shape how UX is perceived and how UX works. So in that team, project, organization. So I think that has a lot of impact that you can be proud of.
Yeah, for sure. And especially, you know, the impact, as you said, Lavinia, but also the growth opportunity, like the ability to kind of wear many hats. Also, I know a lot of people like learn by doing and being fully immersed kind of in the different areas of UX, whether that's kind of the user research element or like the discovery phase, really being able to kind of traverse that yourself and then really learn from those moments.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a very good point. I think we'll probably touch on this later as well, but I think all of us have been in some capacity on a design team of one role, and I currently am. And, you know, I think it's been quite a good learning opportunity for me, because I think up till now I've always worked with larger teams and you get really, really good support. But sometimes I think the best way to learn is literally through by doing, like you say. So yeah, I guess that's one of the pros of pretty much being your own team of one.
Yeah. And just a question that I want to pose to you two is just, why do you think that we have been on kind of these design teams of one in the past?
Yeah. So I think the way I see it is a lack of design maturity. And it's actually not the way I see it. It's kind of like Nielsen Norman kind of explains it that way. Envision has this whole kind of book you can download about design maturity. They've done a whole study about design maturity in like hundreds of organizations, mainly in the US, but I think they tend to apply worldwide. Often people see UX as kind of a patch on things. We tend to be brought onto projects. I know this is Yusin's situation now, where they kind of had a bad product and they're like, okay, we're going to bring a UXer in to make it better, which isn't how things should be, but because of the maturity of that specific team when it comes to design, they see it as a patch and they kind of expect that one person can do it all. And it's also a lack of understanding, I guess, on what UX is. UX is probably like 10, 15 years old as a practice, mm-hmm. which in the world of work is a very young kind of practice. So I would say that's a mix of the two. What do you guys think?
Yeah, or even just the financial reality. Organizations or clients just not having the coin to spend. So they're kind of looking for that like UX unicorn that can come in and can do a range of things. So I think a lot of the time it comes down to that bottom line.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, just building on both your points, I think maybe kind of extending on the first point you raised, Lavinia, I think just a general lack of understanding, because UX is such a new practice. I think often, I feel like in many organizations where maybe, you know, their design practice isn't as mature, they kind of think that UX is pretty much synonymous to making it look really good and really pretty. And that's not a complicated task, right? Because if you're just focusing on maybe how it looks, rather than thinking about the whole experience, you know, people think just bringing in like one designer of any discipline can try and fix that. But then they don't realize that actually there's a lot more work required. And I guess, you know, obviously, Lauren, your point about companies not really having enough money to spend and getting a really, really good team, sometimes they just kind of look for someone who's a generalist, who's good in all areas, who can kind of patch those problems quite quickly. But then, you know, I guess we'll kind of get into it, right? But yeah, I guess that's just the sort of approach that a lot of companies adopt.
Definitely. So I think now we can kind of talk about, we're kind of leading into it, but definitely like the cons of the design team of one, because I think we've got a lot of like lived experience with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, the biggest con is you don't have enough time to do everything. But on top of that, you have to spend a lot of your time evangelizing design, educating people, making people understand why you need to follow a certain process and not do, as Yusin says, kind of what they expect you to do, to just
make it pop,
make the logo bigger. So I think the time aspect is really difficult when you want to be kind of getting ahead with those user research sessions, those workshops and things like that. But often you have to kind of have to explain yourself at every stage of the way, which takes a lot of time and energy.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that point. And especially around this idea of almost like death by meetings. As someone that was on a design team of one, I would spend all my time in meetings where they're like, please change this, this, and this, and like reevaluate this. But because I spent so much time in all those meetings, I never had enough time to like really implement those changes in a really kind of meaningful or like research based way. And I remember on that project, I kind of went to the project leadership and explained my issue, and they really heard what I was saying. And that was the project where I got to work with Yusin, which will always be so close to my heart, because it's amazing if one person is in meetings and then you can also like feed the feedback back to someone, and they can be working while you're in meetings, and it's not like that kind of dead space.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that definitely was one of the highlights actually of my short career as well, getting to work with you. I thought that was really great. I think just having, you know, also someone else to really like bounce off ideas off. Yeah, for me, I guess one of the cons is that, you know, there are some pretty short timelines. Like, I definitely agree with what you say. Very often they're like, oh, can you fix this thing? Or can you fix a particular part of the UI? Or, you know, just making you work on very, I think, tactical, small changes. When actually,
isolated.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. When actually, you know, there is a lot more stuff you need to be doing first, like having, you know, doing proper user research or really coming up with a framework and then kind of assessing like what needs to be improved rather than just picking one thing because it's like the top of that priority list. So yeah, I feel like that's definitely one of the cons.
Yeah, most
another definitely. One I think we can all relate to is like no role models.
For sure.
In many organizations, there's kind of like a hierarchy. You kind of come in as a junior UX designer, then you're mid, and then you're senior, and then you're lead, maybe principal afterwards. There's, you can become a UX manager, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a whole kind of like hierarchy and I guess a path for you to follow. But when you kind of are brought in as the UX designer, you probably are not reporting to someone who's doing UX. You probably are reporting to maybe the product team or maybe the project management team. So people who might not necessarily even understand what you do. And you don't necessarily have anyone to kind of look up to and say, okay, like this is the next stage of my career. And even when you don't have role models, you could be put in teams where you have other UX designers at the same level and you get feedback from each other and you grow that way. But when you're in a UX team of one, you don't even have that. So I think for designers, we all really crave feedback and growth. We're all kind of like long life learners. And it can be quite difficult to feel like you're growing when it's just you on your own, always making every decision and stuff.
For sure. I sometimes worry that I then just repeat a lot of designs that are like elements that worked in previous projects because I don't have the time or the team to kind of see how someone else would approach it. It's always so fascinating working with other designers and you're working on the same problem and you both or like every member of the team adds so much to it. So you kind of are in a way missing those opportunities to learn from others. I definitely know like looking back on kind of past projects, even from like one project to the next, I find I grow so much. And the growth is definitely realized when it's with other people.
Absolutely. I was listening to a podcast with Ren Segal and Pablo Stanley. Our absolute heroes.
I'm on the podcast.
So this was at a time, I know like Pablo now has moved on and has Blush, but this was at a time when he moved on from his health startup to going to Envision. And he was saying himself, so someone who with like decades of experience, someone with so much creativity and who gives so much to the community, he said, I actually left because I was either like the only designer at the start or like the most senior designer afterwards. And there was no one necessarily to learn from and grow with. But now that he was kind of working with Envision, he said he goes to work and he like has all these people to look up to and people, designers who he admires. And he just wanted to grow as a designer. And this is someone, again, who like, had their own startup. They were a founding member. And I think it goes to kind of show that we're all kind of just like wanting to grow. And it's very important to me to it. I loved seeing that at that moment, because I remember I was interviewing for places and I got feedback from another consulting company, actually. And they said, we think you are a great candidate, but we wish you didn't need any support. And I kind of like, I actually said to them, it wasn't that I needed support. I just wanted to work with other designers, because I would have come in as the senior designer and the only designer. And in the meeting, I said that I'm leaving my current place because I tend to only always be on my own. And I think it's really good to kind of be in a team with other people. And it made me feel really good to know that someone with so much experience also craves being surrounded by other designers and kind of, yeah.
No, I think that's so true. And, you know, very reassuring in a way. I think we've like talked about imposter syndrome quite a lot. And, you know, it's nice to know that actually, I mean, not to say that Pablo feels imposter syndrome, right? But I think we're always sort of like striving to create better work and like work with other people. And definitely like being a team really helps with like developing those skills. And I think you shouldn't see it as like, I think the way, you know, the company you interviewed with positioned it was that it was a weakness, but I really think it isn't. And like you say, it's good to know that there are other people out there, very, very senior people with decades of experience who kind of feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. When you're done learning, you're done living. New merch, no.
Gotta add that one to the list. Yeah, create new. Actually, we can add that as a quote to our social media.
I like merch that makes you kind of question your mortality.
I do that every day. I don't need merch to remind me.
Yeah. Amazing. But yeah, as you can see, there are a lot of cons, a lot of kind of struggles being in the design team of one. But we will never leave our dear listeners in a lurch. And we're going to tell you have some things you can do if you find yourself in this position where you are in this design team of one.
One of the things I said before was obviously read the book. It's really good. It will really help you. And you will find yourself kind of going to it whenever you have a problem. But there are also like a lot of resources online. So if you go to our beloved Medium, you can search for things, or you can go directly to like UX Collective or UX Planet. And yeah, just know that there are a lot of designers out there in the exact same position. I actually would argue, with absolutely no research, so I apologize for that, but I would argue that most UX designers are in this situation, mainly because most organizations are at a very low design maturity. So I think maybe 5 years from now, it won't be the case, but I think there are a lot of us in this situation right now. So please know you're not alone and make the most out of these resources. Mm-hmm. What do you guys recommend?
So actually, I'm still fairly new, I would say, to my role as sort of like a UX team of one. And I think I'm still learning, like trying to read up a lot. So like Lavinia says, Medium's really, really helpful for that. Or, you know, lots of people actually publish like thought leadership pieces about how to kind of navigate this whole process. So that's super helpful. But I think I'm quite lucky because like in the company we work for, so me and Lauren, you know, we kind of are in the same practice, and this person that actually Lauren is working with at the moment, like he's a very good user researcher. And I had some questions about, you know, how to kind of come up with a user research framework. And he's been sharing lots of materials with me, or like just, I guess, just general knowledge and tips and tricks that he gained from other projects. So definitely I would say like kind of trying to reach out to anyone in your immediate support network. Like it's always really good to hear ideas from them, kind of like crowdsourcing ideas for what to do. And then also in the current organization I work with, they actually do have a UX design practice that I that who actually kind of reached out to me, because they're trying to bring together designers from across this organization together. And they've also been very kind, because when I mentioned I was working on my own, they were like, hey, if you ever need any sort of like design support, like feel free to reach out to us. So definitely wherever you can think of, you know, some supportive designers to help you, it might be a good idea to kind of reach out to people in your network first. What do you guys think?
So wholesome. Designers look out for designers.
Oh, definitely. It's like, you know, when they emailed me, I was like, oh yeah, like, yay. You know, there's like a part of the organization that focuses on design. And it was like, yeah, you know, like my people, right? It's quite nice.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. In terms of some of the tips I've got, one is walking away from the design, which may be a hard thing because of tight timelines. But I know if I stare at something for too long, I can't tell up from down. Sometimes you just need to go away, go on the coffee break, come back with fresh eyes and just have another look, especially while a lot of us are in lockdown. Just even a walk around the block can really help to clear your mind to then bring you back into it with those kind of fresher perspectives. Then I've got a suggestion around kind of if you don't have your design team specifically with you, it's turning other people on the team into your design team. So if you've got a BA, really kind of bringing them into the folds, getting their perspectives. If you've got front end devs, they probably have a lot of experience looking at kind of other designs, so they can really help. I had an instance where I was on a design team of one, and then I learned kind of late into the project that the front end dev really wanted to become full stack. So he had actually been kind of learning more about design. He was a bit self-taught. So he was able to provide a lot of feedback, which is great. And then I have another story where the senior stakeholder on the client side, he must have like read one UX book and he just like loved the idea of UX. He had like a couple like good buzzwords as well that he like held on to dearly and like would pepper every conversation with. So he was like a true believer, even though he was still building his knowledge base. So it was amazing because he was so senior. And if I kind of said I needed something for the UX process, he was like, for sure. We love UX. We want to do this user-centric. Yes, I'll remove these blockers. So look around for those allies because they are out there.
I love that. I think it's also good. You said this person was quite senior. Yeah. I think it's also good when you are struggling to figure out who made the decision to bring a UX designer in this team in the first place.
Good point.
And they might be the first person to kind of get on your side and get their support. Because I think sometimes you might struggle to get your thoughts across when people don't necessarily know much about UX yet. So if you have like a friend in high places and make good relationship with them, that can really help you. And I think your point about turning other people into the design team is brilliant. Often, like we all work in cross-disciplinary teams, and often the best feedback comes from like the most unlikely of places. So yeah, I think those are really
amen
good
to that. Yeah, I think those are all really great tips. I actually really like the one about, you know, kind of getting feedback from other members of the team, including devs. Actually, on previous projects where I've worked, I think like devs actually have really good knowledge of how something would look. And obviously they have that technical expertise as well. So, you know, if you suggest something that doesn't quite work from a technical perspective, I know some people kind of see that as a blocker when you want to create like really nice designs. But I think sometimes I really appreciate like hearing any honest feedback about why a design can or can't work. And it's really nice to kind of get that feedback from devs as well. So yeah, like really like that.
And of course, our top tip, if you ever need feedback, call into a Hotline Design hotline and we would be happy to help you. And just as a reminder, that's anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod.
Hi, Hotline Design. I'm Sophie, long-time listener and first-time caller. I work in environmental campaigning, and though I'm not a designer by trade, I often get asked to make political comms, and I was wondering if you could recommend any tools. Thanks so much.
Amazing. Thank you so much for calling in, Sophie. And we love to hear from like non-designers. This is a very inclusive podcast. So thank you so much for listening and sending in your question. So I've got a few ideas and I'd love to hear from you, Lavinia and Yusin, just on resources you can use if you need to make something up snappy and if you don't really have a design background. And I'm going to start with the tried and true Canva. And I know there are mixed feelings about Canva in the design community, but I personally do love Canva, especially when people just tell me to make them a poster. It's a great tool if you need things quickly, and you can make kind of designs on the website, and they have an entire social media post section, and they've really got a lot of specific templates. So you've got just like your mainstream Instagram posts, but then they have more specific social media offerings. So things like YouTube thumbnails, TikTok backgrounds, like I'm not hip enough to use that one yet. And also animated social media posts. So it's just a really great option if you kind of want like tried and true templates. They also have good color schemes, so you can easily just whip up a design.
I completely agree with that one. I think Canva also allows you to add the colors and fonts of your organization. So you don't necessarily have to use the template as it comes. You can customize it to your needs. And if you have very little kind of design experience, it's really easy to kind of whip something that looks amazing. And people will actually probably think you do have a design experience when you show it to them. Yeah, I know there's mixed feelings in the community about it, but I genuinely think it's a great tool for people who don't necessarily have the budget to spend on a designer all the time. So yeah,
it's popular for a reason, for sure.
Yeah,
100%. I love Canva. Actually, I've used it on one of my client projects before, and I was just genuinely amazed because, you know, it has so many great like free templates right out of the box. And I think at the time I was working for an NGO, so actually, depending on what kind of organization you work for, you might be able to get a free version of their pro plan, which is awesome. So yeah, I love Canva. That also reminds me, Adobe Spark is kind of like Adobe's version of Canva in a way. Just kind of allows you to do the same thing, pick from hundreds of templates to create like comms or social media material. And I think you can start for free. So Adobe Spark is a great option as well.
Amazing. One that I was kind of surprised by when I was just looking into this is PictoChart, because I often picture them as just kind of doing those like infographics, but they have an entirely kind of social media section. It's entirely dedicated to that. So they've got some great templates as well. So you can just kind of make those designs right then and there. There's also FreePic, which I love just generally. They've got a lot of, you just kind of search social media package and they have like a ton of different templates for different devices, different social media platforms. Though I will say with that one, they normally download as PSD files. So if you've got like a Photoshop, even if you've got like the free trial, you can then kind of work to customize it.
If you've got a little bit of coin in your organization as well, a great place for templates that might not be as kind of widely used on the internet. I think with free resources, sometimes it means you will encounter them a lot. Another great place is just Creative Market. You also support really small businesses and kind of freelancers and things like that. So Creative Market is another great place as well for social media posts and comms and things like that.
And also, I guess we have talked quite a bit about Pablo Stanley, so how could we forget? He has these really great resources. Actually, Lavinia, you recommended them to me because I didn't know about it. I knew about avatars, but I guess, you know, if you ever need sort of like little human heads to add a bit of lifelike imagery to your comms, or you need like really fluid looking illustrations, which are, I think, very popular at the moment, especially across landing pages. Pablo Stanley has a huge collection of resources. So the two that I've used are avatars, just for building like little human heads, but also Humans, which is essentially his sort of open source illustration library, and you can get so many different variations of human figures and kind of customize the colors on that as well to suit your marketing material or your brand. So yeah, definitely a great resource to also check out.
You can also search for Blush. That's his kind of new thing that he basically has different illustrators that work together on this project. So you have both the resources that Yusin mentioned and kind of new resources from other illustrators as well. And they are either free or a pro plan that is quite inexpensive.
We stan Pablo on this podcast.
Yeah,
we need to do a Pablo. Yeah, we need to do a Pablo Queens edition for sure. Because he is fantastic. So Sophie, we hope we answered your question. And just a reminder to everyone else, if you've got any questions, you can always call into Hotline Design Hotline at anchor.fm/hotline design. Excellent. And thank you for joining us this week on Hotline Design Podcast. And we hope that we've helped. If you guys find yourself on design teams of one, and you know that there are some kind of tips and tools for dealing with that. And of course, you can always reach out to us on Hotline Design Pod on Twitter, Instagram. We're also hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. And have an amazing week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.